This episode is brought to you by Choiceology, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind the decisions we make every day and how to make better ones. I'm Dr. Katie Milkman. Join me as I share true stories from Nobel laureates, athletes, authors, and everyday people faced with monumental decisions. We'll share useful tools and strategies to help you make better decisions in your own life. You can find Choiceology at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Look, most people go into healthcare because they want to help people feel better. We don't like it when people are sad. And when you're anxious and you don't really like to do it, you avoid or you hedge or you do all these things that make the communication even worse.
Welcome to How To. I'm Amanda Ripley. One sentence no one wants to hear is, I've got some bad news. Especially if you're sitting in a hospital waiting room, hoping, praying for a loved one to be all right. It's not easy to be the one delivering that bad news either. Here's Dr. Meredith explaining this on Grey's Anatomy.
When you walk into a room to tell someone that their loved one has died,
it's more than just a list of bullet points you've memorized. Yours is the face they will remember for the rest of their life. You are changing this person's life forever. You are responsible for this moment.
And that one moment can lead to even more heartache and confusion if handled poorly.
My name is Mara. I work as a social worker at a level one trauma center.
And Mara, how long have you been there?
Oh my gosh, 6.5 years.
How often do you have to deliver serious news?
That's a good question. I would say it's nearly daily, sometimes multiple times a day.
Now you might be thinking, isn't that the doctor's job? Well, yes, doctors do deliver a lot of serious medical information, and we'll get to that. But it's also Mara's job to track down the next of kin and let them know that something is wrong.
It's just automatically disturbing for me to call up and be like, hi, I'm calling from the hospital. I'm trying to reach the family of so-and-so. I think everybody's pretty much horrified by that type of message.
It often sends people into a panic, understandably. For example, the other day, Mara was helping a young woman who'd come into the hospital with a gunshot wound. The woman was desperate to have someone reach her brother, but police had taken her phone, which often happens in cases like this, and she didn't have her brother's phone number memorized. So Mara needed to track down the brother.
He was immediately, like, started driving and was like, what happened? You know, wants to know, like, exactly what happened. Well, telling somebody the details, like, oh, they were shot while you're behind the wheel of, like, a moving vehicle isn't, you know, ideal. I was like, are you able to pull over? Are you able to stop the car? And then he was like, no, I'm like 5 minutes away. I just want to get there. So then I started going through, you know, okay, yeah, she's going to be okay. Let's like give you the information about the parking garage and how to get in here and what the floor is going to be.
Holding back further details of what happened was smart until the brother got into a more controlled setting. But once he got to the hospital, Mara ultimately had to break the news.
Your sister, I'm so sorry to tell you this, but she was actually shot. He had a very, like, flat affect. I've had, obviously, like, gunshot wounds are, you know, that's, we have a fair amount of that at the hospital where I work. People can respond in a variety of ways, oftentimes, like, extreme emotional reaction, where they can no longer speak, they can no longer, like, be on the phone, or they cannot take in information about, like, how to get where we're located.
How do you feel about this part of your job?
Okay, so I am a licensed clinical social worker. Mm-hmm. So I have a master's degree in social work, and then I did all this mental health care training. But that is not this, you know? I would love to have some sort of sense of how to do this part of my job in a less traumatic way for people.
Here's the thing. Eventually, all of us will have to deliver bad news, even if we don't work in an ER, whether we're a police officer or an HR rep or just a person on the planet. We're gonna have to tell someone something that changes everything. And at some point in time, all of us will be on the receiving end of that same conversation. So how can we make these gut-wrenching encounters go less horribly? It turns out there's a fascinating body of research on how to communicate grim news. And just about all of us can get a lot better at it once we know how. So today on the show, how to deliver bad news better. Mara will trade tips with a doctor who spent his career figuring this out and teaching it to other clinicians. Stay with us.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Choiceology, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. I'm Dr. Katie Milkman, a behavioral scientist and professor at the Wharton School and the author of the best-selling book, How to Change. You may have heard expressions like, time to get up and going, today's bad decisions aren't going to make themselves, or bad decisions make good stories. But really, no one wants to suffer the consequences of making a bad choice. Join me as I share true stories from sports heroes, Nobel laureates, and everyday people faced with monumental decisions. We'll discuss the latest research in behavioral science and dive into themes like whether we can learn to make smarter decisions and how powerful it can be to get a do-over. And we'll share useful tools and strategies to help you make better choices in your own life. You can find Choiceology at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen.
So if you've been listening to this show for a while, you probably know that I routinely have these existential crises about the state of journalism and how we could do it better. One thing I do to cope with these crises is to interview people in other fields to figure out how they do things, things journalists could maybe learn from, which is how I met Dr. Arnold.
Oh my God, you should call me Bob. I'm a palliative care physician at the University of Pittsburgh and UPMC. I also have worked with two other colleagues around the country to teach clinicians how to have conversations with seriously ill patients.
I interviewed one of your colleagues a while back, and she called you the Yoda of having difficult conversations with patients.
It's because I'm old and getting smaller, I think.
All jokes aside, it's actually because Bob is incredibly wise, which I witnessed firsthand when I got to sit in on one of his classes for intensive care physicians late last year. And one of his first lessons about how to break bad news, stop calling it bad news.
The patients and families didn't like it when we editorialize about the news. Their view was, tell me the news, I'll determine whether it's bad or not. And so I've gone to using the term serious news, which means anything that changes your sense of what you expected the future to be, rather than bad news.
One of the things Bob is unusually good at is teaching in such a way that he knows people are actually learning, which means they have to practice. So we had the doctors meet one by one with professional actors and role play these difficult conversations. And I gotta tell you, it didn't go the way I expected.
You know, you had these ICU doctors who had just, you know, lived and worked through a pandemic. And I was so struck by how nervous they got, knowing they were actors, knowing this wasn't real. Some of them just couldn't bring themselves to say the thing, you know, and or didn't know how to say it.
It's hard when you're a clinician because you have all these medical facts in your head and you've been trained to spend all your time on the medical facts. And then you're in a high stakes conversation where the person is clearly anxious and may get really emotional. And you both need to keep the medical facts in your head and listen really carefully to them and be really clear about what you want to say. And you haven't done it very much.
In other words, the skill set required to become a doctor is not the same as the skills you need to communicate heartbreaking news to humans. And by the way, it's not just doctors who struggle with this.
I was being reminded of a scenario with one of my friends who had had a brain tumor that had been reoccurring over a period of probably 8 years or so. There was her sending out sort of this message to a bunch of us that all went to college about sort of the update. Mm-hmm. And because of my experience, I could read between the lines and say, oh, this is going to be the end. And I remember reaching out to some friends of ours at the time and being like, we need to get out there. We need to go see her. And they were like, what are you talking about? We read the same letter. And I was like, oh, no.
So if you're trying to communicate serious news, you want to start by understanding what the other person already knows.
My goal isn't to give information. My goal is that they hear and understand the information. Those are two different things. We know that they're more likely to hear it and understand it if it builds on what they already know, and I match their level of sort of jargon or medicalese language and to what they've already heard. And one of the ways to make it easier is if you, as a group, you and the other clinicians and the nurses and the social worker sit down and say, what do I really want this patient or family to know after the conversation? That's what we'll call a headline. And you write it down because what we know is that we hedge because we don't want people to be upset. And so we all have a tendency to do that. We do that when we break up with people. We do that all the time in our normal lives. And so writing it down helps you be clearer to say the things that you really wanted to make sure that you were going to say.
Bob is 100% right. Actually, this tip is kind of a through line that comes up a lot on this show. Difficult conversations deserve preparation. Writing things down shouldn't be seen as a crutch. Instead, it should be seen as a buoy when the emotional waters get choppy. And it's especially true in the medical field.
Folks can get really caught up in speaking in great medical detail that even myself as a provider that's been in the hospital for whatever, several years, will sit there and go, I have no idea what they just said. That's the biggest issue, I think, for families, especially the families that we serve. And they don't necessarily indicate that because it is this, like, you know, hierarchical relationship where you're like, okay, listen to what the doctor says and don't question it. But there's times where you can tell that families, like, do not understand.
People don't want to look stupid in front of clinicians. So they won't ask the doctor. When the doctors leave, they may ask the nurse or social worker. And two, we give the medical information because that's what we do when we talk to each other. And so when we talk to a patient's family and at the end of giving really serious news, the family says, what does that mean? What it means is that we didn't do a good job. Because giving a headline means saying what's wrong and what does it mean for your loved one. Meaning is a core piece of it for the patient and the patient's family. And so that's what you have to, before you go in the room, you have to think about how do I, you know, at a fourth or fifth grade level, because average health literacy, how do I say it and how do I say what it means? finally, if it's really serious information, the way that you know that it was heard is most of us, when we get really serious news that isn't what we expected or wanted, most of us respond emotionally. And so if the family doesn't get upset or give you any emotion, you have to wonder whether you said it in a way that they really heard it.
So I think if I have this right, the way you teach this is to use the formulation ask, tell, ask. So ask to get a sense of what they understand and what they want to know. And then tell, that's that headline, which is information and meaning, what it means for them or their loved one. And then ask again, right? Especially if you haven't gotten a clear emotional response.
So I'll often get an emotional response, and then we need to attend to the emotion, because remember, when people are emotional, they're not listening. Mm-hmm. And then everybody
When you say, Bob, attend to the emotion, what does that sound like?
You need to sort of be present with them and acknowledge what they're going through as one person with another person.
I see. So prove that you're witnessing and aware of the pain.
Yes. You know, mm-hmm. I often will say, depending on the patient and the family, I often will say, this sucks.
Oh, literally, those words, yeah.
Or I wish I had better news, because I do wish I had better
news. Yeah, it's true. Mm-hmm. Mara, what are some of the things you say to communicate that this sucks?
This is really hard. I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. Sorry, it's weird to say it again now in this context and not have like any emotion behind those right. words. I have witnessed people say things in a way that feels like detached from emotion or like empty, like, I'm sorry for your loss, in this way that I'm like, I never want to say that to people with mm-hmm. where it doesn't feel authentic or genuine.
The words matter some at the beginning. What really matters as you get more experienced is that they're genuine and authentic and you're present with them.
Mm. Yeah. Bob, I'm curious, what does it look like when you get everything right?
When it goes as well as it can go, you are really present with the family. I'm going to use family, although it could be patient. They hear the information. They feel like you're sitting with them and attending to them and have all the time in the world to answer their questions. They feel listened to and heard. I often will say to people, when you go home, I just want to make sure we're all on the same page. So tell me sort of what you're going to tell your family when you call them up tonight. It's the sort of second ask. Are they taking back what I wanted them to take back? They take it back, and I've done a good job to prepare them for the next step, whether the next step is another clinician coming in to seeing them later today, whether the next step is a decision to go forward with surgery. I've helped them begin to reintegrate what life looks like, given the serious news.
That's the goal. But what if the family doesn't want to hear the serious news, like, at all? That's coming up after the break.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
We're back with Bob Arnold, a doctor who specializes in teaching clinicians how to deliver serious news, and Mara, a medical social worker at a level 1 trauma hospital.
I had a family one time who was like the ultimate we don't want to hear bad news family, where a member of their family had been shot actually to the head and was not going to survive. And we were speaking with the mom. The conversation barely started, and then she just like got up and was like, I don't want to hear any more bad news. I'm done, and wanted to leave the room. I was obviously there and followed her, you know, because she was in crisis, out into the hallway. And then we eventually took her up to the roof of the hospital, but there was a garden so she could just like get some air and try to explore like what's going on for her. But it was really rough because we couldn't even have the conversation of like how severe this was, because she just got up and left. I'm like, how do you better respond to that?
I let her go. I say, oh my God, this feels like it's really overwhelming. All these people trying to give you all this information. What would be helpful to you at this point? And you just say it. She'll calm down. She already knows things suck. That's why she can't hear anymore.
Right.
You know, when I say to people, would you like to hear what I think? And they say, no. I asked. They answered. I'm done. I have one of my questions that I say to families is, I wonder if you could imagine, despite everything we're doing, if things don't go the way we want. And if they say, no, I can't imagine he's not going to get better. Okay. But there's nothing more for me to say at that point. I build a relationship for next time.
Right.
Sometimes the family doesn't want to hear bad news, and yet we have to make decisions, right?
Right.
Those are harder. And then again, I'll just be transparent. I'll say, I know you don't want to hear anything worrisome, and yet I'm feeling stuck because I feel like we need to make some decisions. And so I'm not sure how to handle this because I don't feel like I can ask you to make decisions without knowing what's going on. And then I shut up and let them tell me.
Yeah.
I actually really love that. Like, I would love if a doctor said to me, I don't know what to do. I feel stuck. I'm not sure how to handle this. I never heard those words come from a doctor before.
Yeah, but part of it is, again, it's being genuine. People will ask me questions, and the residents will say, what do you know if you don't know the answer? And I'll say, you know, the one thing I don't want to do is give you incorrect information. That's a great question. I need to ask some other people. I will come back to you. Mm-hmm. And they're afraid they may not trust me or respect me. I can't fix that. I can only give them genuine information. And my job is to get the information and then come back to them. And again, some of this is, I'm very old. You have to practice it. You have to have a chance to debrief it with colleagues. You know, for the first 15 years of my career, I had this amazing psychiatric nurse who I would audio tape myself with HIV positive patients. And I would ask her to listen to the audio tapes. She would give me feedback about what I could do better.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, if you go into a patient and you say, I want to be better at communicating, can I audio tape myself and have someone listen to it to tell me how I can be better? Patients are like thrilled that you want to get better. They all say yes. They're like, oh, okay.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. No, I'm struck by how I've been interviewing people for 20 years. And until I started doing a podcast, no one ever listened to me interview and gave me feedback because I was a print journalist. But I wonder, Mara, do you get any feedback?
You know, no, I haven't been recorded having conversations since I was probably in my second year of grad school. But yeah, it's been a decade since anyone gave me that level of feedback, which is kind of sad, to be honest.
No, I think that's not great. That's the norm, right? In a lot of professions. Yeah. But it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Most of the people listening to this are not clinicians, but they will at some point have to sit down for a conversation like this. Someone is giving them bad news. Is there anything that you would suggest families or individuals kind of keep in mind or do to try to make that conversation more useful for them?
bring someone with you or say, can I tape record this so I can listen to it again later? There are some great apps out there in the world now that not only will let you tape record it, but it'll translate the medical jargon.
Oh, really? Wow.
Into normal, like, human language. Mm. And so I think first be kind to yourself if you don't remember it. And don't be embarrassed to ask the clinician or the nurse again the next day. You're not expected to remember it. Say, I didn't really get it. Can you tell me again?
Yeah, that's true. It is hard to say that. It feels like Mara was saying, it's very hierarchical often, and you feel like at a power disadvantage and you feel not at your best. Mara, any advice that comes to mind for you?
I always try to encourage families to be taking care of their physical needs, like making sure to drink water. A lot of times people don't feel like eating after getting horrible news, or, you know, even the day I meet them, like, have you slept? Mm-hmm. Like, did you get any rest? Because that will impact folks' abilities to take in information.
Absolutely. Yeah.
If you're somebody who, whatever, runs, swims in any sort of regular way, like, to try to continue to do that, even though your husband is in the hospital, like, it's okay to come in an hour after the start of visiting time, because your regular routine is that you would be swimming. Or,
well, that seems like a really important thing to give them permission, right? To, because if you say that to me, I'm going to feel like, okay, it's okay, I can go take a walk.
Right.
The other things I would tell them to do are ask that a nurse or a social worker can be there, because often they have more time and will be able to translate stuff after the doctor is done. Your job is to get the information that you need, in realizing that the clinicians may not have all the answers either and may not be able to give you the answers that you want, particularly if your loved one is really or if you're really seriously ill.
Yeah, I remember one of my favorite formulations that you taught those physicians was the words, I'm worried that, because often there's uncertainty, right? Like, you can't say if the person's going to live or die or how long they're going to live. And so that becomes its this own, like, kind of quagmire. But instead to say, I'm worried that your father will not recover and be able to do the same. He will not live the life he led before. I feel like I'm worried that is a really good way to start that sentence.
Yeah, no, I think that's affirming. I will say that as a provider who's not a doctor, I started to have this feeling of if this happens to me, to my family, I'm going to think, I want to hear you tell me the way that you're talking about it in the break room. Or in behind the scenes, before you prepped for this meeting, what did you say? What was the blunt way that you spoke about this? Hmm. Because so many times before a family meeting, I'm understanding where everyone's speaking bluntly about this person's not going to survive. There's no path forward. And then we're in the meeting and all of a sudden I'm like, what are they talking about? This is so confusing.
Oh my God, I love that. And what I joke is, doctors often, when they're with families, they give the NPR story, which is really, really long, and it doesn't have interpretation with it. And the family has to sort of impute. They have to sort of guess from the tone and what the clinicians are saying, what it means. And that feels unfair to me. Then the doctors get mad if the family doesn't understand it, and the family didn't understand it because we did a bad job.
If the patient or the family said, can you please just say it the way you would have said it in the break room? Like, do you think that would work?
No, they'd get wigged out, because you're not supposed to know that. You're not supposed to know we have a break room. What I'll often say to families are, some people like the big information. Some people like the sort of just the summary. Other people really need the doctors to be sort of optimistic. Help me understand how you most like information. Mm-hmm. I think that doctors are really worried because there are some patients, and we can't predict, who really don't want to hear serious news. And so everybody remembers the time where you did it and the family got really angry at you, and nobody likes families to get angry or complain about you. And so we go from bad situations and we generalize. Mm-hmm. One of the advantages of saying, tell me what you already know, is you can begin to get a sense of where that family is.
Mm-hmm. And where they what they want to know, what level of, like Mara wants a lot of detail if it's her loved one, you know. And
no, Mara doesn't want a lot of detail. Mara wants the bottom line.
I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mara wants to know what it means. Mara doesn't want people to hedge.
Yeah.
What Mara knows is that she can sit in family meetings and she listens for the hedge words that tell her what the clinicians are really saying.
Oh, what's like a hedge word?
Really sick is often a hedge word, because it's sort of like if your loved one is in the ICU, they're obviously really sick.
Right.
And so when they keep saying really sick, it's hard to tell what they mean.
All right. This feels like a good moment to recap what we've learned so far. If you've got to communicate disturbing news, start by trying to figure out what the other person understands already and really listening when they tell you. Then give them the headline, the news plus the meaning. That's important. But don't wing it. Write this down in advance. You might be tempted to skip this step. Please don't. After that, you should see some emotion. Acknowledge it. And if you don't see it, try again. Remember, the goal is to make sure the person has understood the news, not just to make sure you've said it.
It's striking to me how both of you are describing a conversation that requires the clinician releasing some grip on the control over the conversation, right? Which can feel scary. I remember you saying in that class, Bob, one of the difficult things that patients sometimes say is, I'm hoping for a miracle. I'm sure you've heard that one, right, Mara?
Yes, a lot. Yes. Yes.
Well, I remember Bob saying that you could just say, me too. God, a miracle would be great. I would love that.
Yeah, I think sometimes for us, the miracle has already happened. The miracle is that you're able to come hold this person's hand at their bedside, and that they have not died in the street. Mm. You know, that's the miracle that we got to have for you. And it's hard to say that to folks, but that's the real miracle that we're all working in that context of intensive care, is that they're able to lie here and you got to hold them and be with them now.
I do have to say, and I think Mara would agree, that what I find more than anything else in having serious conversations with patients and families is the degree to which families and patients are resilient and they come together and they find meaning and love in very stressful times, and that feeds me as much as having difficult conversations might seem like it's draining. In general, I just see people doing the best they can in really hard times and sort of being resilient and loving and meaningful and powerful.
I want to leave you with this last insight. Hope is inherently intertwined with delivering serious news. We doctors, journalists, people in general, often worry about giving people false hope. I actually asked Bob about this the last time I was with him, and I think it's a lovely place to end. He said, "Hope is a many-splendored bird. When doctors say hope, they believe there's one kind of hope, which is to live longer. But many patients say they hope they're going to live longer and they hope they're not going to be in pain, or they hope they're going to be able to go on vacation," and on and on. We don't know people's hopes until we ask.
We get in our way a lot. It's really hard to listen clearly and try to hear what the other person is saying rather than to filter through our own beliefs and emotions and preconceptions. It's how do you really give people frames and words to be able to really have genuine relationships with people and support them at times through things that are very new to them and are very hard for them to hear.
We are deeply thankful to Mara and Bob for sitting down with us, despite the very long hours they're both working in hospitals right now. We'll put a link to Vital Talk, Bob's nonprofit, in the show notes if you want to learn more. And please share this episode with friends, because sooner or later, we'll all be here. So why not make hard conversations a little easier? And remember, we're always here for you with whatever difficult human problems you need help with. Send us a note at howto@slate.com or leave us a voicemail, 646-495-4001. And we'd love to have you on the show. How To's executive producer is Derek John. Rosemary Belson, Kevin Bendis, and Jabari Butler produced this episode. Merritt Jacob is our senior technical director. Charles Duhigg created the show. Carvel Wallace is my co-host. I'm Amanda Ripley. Thanks for listening.